at Mother Love's Retreat in Lakemont, Georgia.
First of all, I want to thank each and every one of you for this may be my last opportunity to express my love divine for you folks and the way you have received me. And I want you to know that when I get back to California, that the intervening space won't stop my loving thoughts to each and every one of you. Thank you, love you, and bless you forevermore. Once again, I want to call attention to a really beautiful chart of the mighty I Am Presence. But again, I want to call attention to the fact that the upper figure represents your holy God self, but it represents and is not the holy God self. It is merely a replica of it, in a sense, to give you a better sense of appreciation or approach in the use of the chart, and not get into the habit of, just loving the chart itself. So we must understand that and send our loving adoration to the mighty I Am Presence within, at the same time that we are looking at the chart, which gives us a closer feeling of understanding what the chart is, or what the presence is, and the white fire being behind the mighty I Am Presence, and the causal body that surrounds the upper figure, which is your accumulated good that you have gathered down through the centuries in your thousands of embodiments. We all know that there have many ideas and many things written about Jesus the Christ and about his ministry. It is true that there are four gospels, but they corroborate each other. But there are other books that do not corroborate Jesus' lifetime and ministry. This discourse that I'm going to read portions of and make mention of is by Jesus on December the 5th, 1932. And Jesus said, "I am the open door which no man can shut." And then he explains, "When I said that I am the open door which no man can shut, I meant humanity to understand I referred to the great I Am, which is the life of every individual manifest in form. I did not wish to convey that the personal Jesus was the only one to whom this great privilege was ordained. Each one of you, beloved children of the one Father, has the same mighty presence within you, the great I Am that I have, and that I had at that time by which I achieved my eternal victory." In looking through all of the blessed discourses, some by Saint Germain, one by Nadam, part of it by Sha'ara, some as I should say, by Saint Germain, but several by Jesus and one by the great Aeolian Arcturus. These are all powerful in their statements, but this is one that I would love to have the students comprehend and follow. Saint Germain says, "I wish each one of you would go by yourself sometime during the day for at least 5 minutes and talk to your I Am Presence something like this: Great masterful presence which I am, I love, I adore thee, I give back unto thee the fullness of all creative power, all love, all wisdom, and through this power which thou art, I give thee full power to make visible in my hands and use the fulfillment of my every desire. I no longer claim any power as my own, for I now claim thee, the holy and all-conquering presence in my home, my life, my world, and my experience. I acknowledge thy full supremacy and command of all things, and as my consciousness is fixed upon an achievement, your invincible presence and intelligence takes command and brings the fulfillment into my experience quickly, even with the speed of thought. Now, I like to impress upon my students when I go places and speak and tell them that we have electricity in our homes, but we don't walk up to the button or the whatever we press to get a light and say, okay, electricity, go ahead and do your stuff. And it don't, of course. And we know about the I Am Presence, and we know about these beautiful discourses and the things that we can do to call the presence into action. But if we don't call them into action, they don't work by themselves, or they would have done it thousands of years ago. So we have to get busy and acknowledge that presence and call the presence into action. He continues, I know that thou art ruler over time, place, and space. Therefore, thou requirest only now to bring into the visible activity thy every perfection. I stand absolutely firm in the full acceptance of this now and forever, and I shall not allow my mind to waver from it, for at last I know we are one. Now, in addition to calling that to your attention, I want to call this fact to your knowledge that in one of my classes in Southern California many years ago, there were a couple that came and asked if there was anything that I could do, because the man that owned the house next door suddenly passed away, and lo and behold, a speakeasy moved in, and it was residential property, and how they got in there only, well, who knows. At any rate, they made so much noise and so much trouble there that the cursing and swearing was going right next door, and it was warm weather and the wind was open, and these people had two lovely daughters, an impressionable age, and why should they have to listen to that? But the people who were in charge of this, that part of town, did nothing. So I said, all right, I shall make a decree, and I want you to make it with me. I will give the decree and you repeat. So we did. And we asked that if it was right for those people to be there, then do thou find the perfect place for us and our girls. All right. The next day they came back, and after the class said to me, well, Brother Bill, your decree didn't do much good, because they had more people there last night than they had the night before and the night before that. And I said, we're not interested in how many people go there. We're interested in our decree and standing with it. We're not going to change it just because half a dozen more people came there. So, okay. On the seventh night, the same kind of report, and again I said, we stand with our decree if the heavens fall. Now, never mind looking over there all the time to see how many cars are there. Well, the eighth night it was just as bad, and finally, on the tenth night, they came to me and said, well, Bill, what in the world are we going to do? And I said, we're going to stand fast with our decree. That's what we're going to do. So, the next morning, I got a telephone call before I ever got out of bed. And they said, will you come downstairs immediately? And I said, if not sooner, I'll be right down as soon as I get dressed. When I got down there, they told me this beautiful story. The man next door had rapped on their door that morning and said, give this key to whoever it belongs to and threw it on the porch and said, I'm quitting. And they said, well, for goodness sake, you had more people in your speakeasy last night than you ever had. You had more cars. I said, yes, I had the crowd, but none of them paid. They're all on the books, and I can't go on that way. And he says, tell him he can have his house back. Okay. Well, I said, thank you, mighty Iron Presence. Our decree worked, and we stood with it. And we didn't waver, and we didn't change it, and we didn't look to somebody else to see if they could do some fixing. You were the one and the only one that acts or that can act anytime, anywhere. Knowing that when you say, I am, you are stirring that action to fulfill your conscious demand. One of the first and mightiest things that became clear in my consciousness, and this is Jesus speaking, was my ability, everyone's ability, to qualify this energy consciously directed with whatever the seeming need demanded. Thus, the energy may produce for your use gold, silver, money, food, clothing, means of conveyance, or whatever the conscious demand is. Now, we had a little bit of proof about that just the other day when there was a gentleman here by the name of Richard Mason, and his wife Geraldine was here, and he has proven the law and decreed for that beautiful,
a van.
And he fixed it up something magnificent, but it all came through the presence. All right. Why don't you and I then stick with our understanding and stay with what we know is correct? However, we don't say, oh, my dear friends, I hope it works, but I guess it won't. If you're going to work that way, you're going to get nowhere. In the first place, you have to talk like you were talking to an elder brother or a father or to Jesus himself or to Saint Germain and mean what you say. Don't say it unless you mean it, but mean what you say. And say it with feeling, as we have demonstrated here before. If you say a thing, especially a decree, say it with feeling in your solar plexus, and then stick with it. I want to stress that so much because too many people give up after the first day if their manifestation doesn't appear. And if I ask them, did did you say your decree with feeling? Well, I said it in the usual way that I talk. Well, if you do it that way, you might as well have stood out the window. Now, excuse my French, but I mean what I'm talking about tonight is that you must mean what you say, and you must say it with feeling. Now, Jesus continues, it is unfortunate indeed that some of the scriptural statements have been clouded by human concept. Yet, I am thankful indeed that many have remained unaltered. Another statement I used constantly for more than 3 years was, I am always the majestic power of pure love that transcends every human concept and that opens the door to me to the light within its heart. I knew this later greatly intensified my true inner vision. I'm going to digress again. One of my students down in San Bernardino said, well, Brother Bill, I don't need the masters, I can do this myself. And I said to him, well, then you're a self-made man. And he said, well, something like that. And I said, well, I'd like to ask you a question. Do you remember to stay awake and breathe all night while you're supposed to be sleeping? And who beats your heart when you forget about it? He said, well, the masters don't do it. No, but your mighty I Am Presence is, and your mighty I Am Presence is one with the masters. And when you say that you don't need the masters, you're talking through your hat. For the simple reason that even Jesus had two masters that taught him. Saint Germain had two or more. And I have five mentors teaching me and have had the privilege of hearing the beautiful voices of others telling me what I might proceed to do or continue to do and have given me some new information. That has been tremendous. And I want to say, with all of the love of my heart, without the masters continually prodding me, I don't believe that I'd ever got to first base and got out of the city of Chicago many, many years ago. So, I want to also call your attention to the fact that while some people are always claiming that Jesus was taught by the Essenes, I don't exactly disagree with that, but I don't exactly agree with it, because Jesus himself says that during the time that he disappeared, he had traveled to Egypt first, then to India and Persia, and then back to India and then into Tibet, where he studied with John the Baptist. Now get that. John the Baptist was with him a part of the time. And he read some of those ancient manuscripts that were written in ancient languages, but he was given the understanding of how to read them. So when people ask you how in the world Jesus received his teaching when he was on the way home from his Tibetan visit, then he met the great, great master known to us as the great divine director. And he has been the master of many of our present day masters. We might as well accept and acknowledge the truth that when we call the mighty I Am Presence into action and insist upon what we have decreed for and stay with it, it will be done. But an ascended master is the presence, and therefore there's no problem. They can call forth anything that they want. And as one man said to me, well, you mean to say that what you read was from Jesus? And I said, yes. And he said, in English? And I said, yes. And he said, well, you know, Jesus couldn't speak English. All he spoke was Aramaic. And I said, oh, well, excuse me. You sound like a learned man. You must have gone to college. He said, yes, I went to Northwestern. And I said, good, that's where I went. And he said, you did? And I said, yes. By any chance, I took up public speaking there, and I took up letter writing, and I took up, I took up about six studies, which I don't believe I've used very much of. And I said, what did you take? He said, I took a business course. Did you take a language, for instance? And he said, no. But I had some friends that took up Spanish. Oh, they take a two-year course or a four-year course? And he said, I guess they took up a four-year course. But he said, you know, they did all right with it. I said, in 4 years, they were able to speak Spanish pretty good? He said, yes. I said, well, Jesus has had 2,000 years to learn English. What makes you think he's dumber than you are? Well, of course, they don't like to have me say that, but I don't like to be cornered either. And I don't like to see anybody think that when an ascended master reaches that point where all things are added, and when you make your ascension, all things shall be added, all wisdom, all knowledge, all truth, all you will have to do is to send one of those rays and direct it to get the information that you want, and you have it instantly. Besides that, Jesus had had many incarnations, even as you and I, but he was able, from the ascended state, to draw from the causal body and can speak any language that he chooses, and there's no problem. So I explained that to the man so that he wouldn't feel too bad. But on the other hand, some of the statements that might be made by various individuals will be so ridiculous that one would think that they would stop to consider a little bit what they have said or what they have asked. Now, on the other hand, I had, in the early days of my travels, a very lovely fellow by the name of Earl Thomas, who acted as my secretary while I did the most of the speaking at the classes. And we traveled considerably around the country, especially around the eastern part of the country, around Chicago. And he had a great big birthmark about the size of a silver dollar right here in front of his ear, and it went up into his hair, and every time he would shave, he would seemingly draw blood in order to get that hair that was, should be, even with the other side. And one day he said, boy, I wish I didn't have that. And I said, well, let's get rid of it. He said, how do you propose to do that? And I said, Saint Germain has told us that if we will meditate, and if you will use discourse number 20 in the I Am Discourses, it tells you how to use your hands over the body and produce the perfection that you desire. It won't work unless you do it. The water won't turn on when you say to the faucet, hey, let's go. You have to turn it on. And in the I Am activity, you have to use the law that is given to you. And so, every every morning we would get up a half an hour earlier, and he would hold his left hand up like that, and with his right hand he would lightly rub that liver spot. I don't know what you would call it. It was a birthmark. And he didn't rub it as though he was trying to rub it off. He just barely touched it. And he would do that for 15 minutes. And I was doing something else, and then Bert Erickson, who lived with us, was doing something else. All right. All of a sudden, Earl Thomas, the gentleman with the birthmark, had a vacation coming, and they moved him ahead a couple of months. And so he decided to come west. So, all right. When he returned, the birthmark was gone, but he had forgotten to use the exercise anymore. So I said to him, "Earl, you look marvelous. Have you looked at yourself recently in the mirror?" And he said, "No, why should I?" So I took him by the arm and led him in to where he could look at himself in the mirror, and he didn't see anything different, or didn't seem to. And I said, "Well, then, how about that left ear of yours?" And then for the first time he realized that that birthmark was gone, and he had had it for 55 years. Now, don't tell me the power of the presence couldn't do it. He didn't go to a doctor to have it done, for if he had, there probably would have been a scar there. It was 55 years. Now, don't tell me the power of the presence couldn't do it. He didn't go to a doctor to have it done, for if he had, there probably would have been a scar there. But there was no scar. It was dissolved by the presence of the mighty I Am. So, you too can do that. Now then, if we have time, I want to tell you a story of a little boy, 4 years old. This was a farmhouse where I used to go every Saturday night, 80 miles from Chicago, and give a class. And so, his mother said to me, "Brother Bill, do you suppose there's something wrong with Bobby?" And I said, "Why so? He's normal in every respect as far as I can see." And she said, "He goes out there in the farmyard all by himself and shivers and seems to be playing, and there's nobody to play with. There isn't another youngster his age within a mile." Well, I said, "Maybe we can get a decree and see what happens." She said, "Well, what kind of a decree can you give for that?" And I said, "Well, I don't know, but I can try." And so, "Mighty I Am Presence, whatever this boy is doing, bless him and bring him through. If he's speaking some kind of gibberish, then do thou dissolve it so that he don't carry that on into his adult ears." And so we let it go with that. Well, a man came with a wagon in which he had many different kind of wares that he sold to the farmers. He had dishes, he had pots and pans, and he had needles and what, thread and what. And as he stopped by the boy, he spoke to him in our Armenian. And the boy answered him. So he said, "Are your folks Armenian?" And the boy said, "No, we're Americans." So he went to the door and knocked, and the lady of the house came, and he said, "Are you folks Armenian?" "Oh no, we're American." "Is your husband Armenian?" "No, he's American too. Never been out of the country." "Well, your little boy is speaking Armenian. of his previous life. There's no question about it. And if you know anybody that comes to the class, ask them to watch him and see if he has an invisible playmate. I think that he's talking to an invisible playmate. So, okay. The next I heard was some people that had a farm next to theirs had sold it at a good price and they had good crops. And so they took a trip around the world. And they brought back many, many pictures and they had them in a beautiful album and they were showing them to their friends that had lived next door to them. And little Bobby got behind and looked. And he said, there, there, that's where I used to live. And the people looked at him in amazement and said, that's Armenia. And he said, yes, those kind of boats, and that's the kind they had on that lake where I used to live. And they marveled. Yes, that's where he used to live. So, when I came Saturday, I said to him, well, Bobby, you used to live there where they had those gondolas, look like the boats that they have in Naples or Venice. And how come did you live there? Well, he said, there used to be these wicked men that had those swords that were round-like. And he said, they used to come and chase us, and if we didn't get back to the big house, which was a community house, according to the people that had made this travel and had the pictures, if they didn't get there, the senator was the Turks, and that would be the end. And I said, so then what happened? Well, he said, one day I was on the wrong side of the lake, and I had my work to do, and one of them caught me, and he says, and so I came here. Reincarnation? Had to be, wouldn't it? Well, some people don't believe in reincarnation, and you know it isn't in the Bible, isn't it? I can prove it there in many places. But, okay, then I will tell you about this activity where the same Earl Thomas that I had with me went and used to talk in Canada and had very good success. But one day I got a telephone call, Brother Bill, Earl Thomas that used to travel with you is in a hospital in Long Beach and they say that he's dying. Wouldn't you go to see him? And I said, yes, but what hospital? Well, I don't know the name of it. Well, I said, there might be a dozen hospitals in Long Beach. And they said, well, that's all the information I can give you. So I got into the car, and I drove to Long Beach on the freeway, and I said, Mighty I Am Presence, you know where he is, and I want to see him. And if he has called for me, he wants to see me. So, do thou direct me to that hospital. All right, I got off the freeway, and I drove away, and then I thought, well, what am I doing? I don't have any directions. I'll go in here and ask if they know where the different hospitals are or how many there are, or could I get a list from their telephone book? And I walked inside and a nurse came up to me and it was a hospital and it didn't look like a hospital. So I said, well, I have a very unusual problem. I'm looking for a man by the name of Earl Thomas that's in some hospital somewhere in Long Beach. And she said, okay, I'll take you to him. And she took me into the room where he was. Miracle? Nothing else but nothing else but. I had no idea. And yet I was led right to the place. And so the nurse said to me, he's in a coma. He won't live 24 hours. So it won't do you any good to try to talk to him. So I said to her, you want a bet? And I walked in and I held his beautiful hands, for he had magnificently beautiful hands. I took his hands and held them in mine and sent love and blessings to him. And he opened his eyes and he said, hello, Bill. But you won't need to come and see me another time because I won't be here. And I said, would you like for me to give you a decree? And he said, yes, would you? And I gave the decree that he be taken in peace and harmony and be given his ascension for the service that he had rendered. And as I gave the final words of the decree, I kissed him on the brow, and he sighed, and Thurl Thomas was no more in the critical. But 3 days later, I received the word that he had had his ascension. I said his name was Earl Thomas. We had been doubting Thomas, one of the disciples of Jesus at the time of Jesus. I tell you that just to show you that we don't know who we may be speaking with, who we may be talking to, or who knows who you are, unless you have had instruction from the great ones. There's no way of knowing. Or there is, yes, but you have to be deep in the presence to be able to ascertain who your friend or neighbor might be. These things that I tell you are only to give you assurance that if I could do these things, so could you. And why do we wait and hope that someone else will do it for us? So, from now on, do your stuff. And don't be afraid to act. For in your Bible, it says, concerning the works of my hands, command ye me. That blessed presence wants you to know that when you need something sufficiently intense, don't be afraid. And if you're a little bit doubtful, then it says, concerning the works of my hands, command ye me. And I had a student one time, or rather a person that came, had never been to one of my classes, but had heard someone else talking about it, and says, you have people decree and you people command. You have no business to do that. That's of the devil. And I said, in your church they don't decree? And she says, certainly not. So I showed her in the book of Job where thou shalt decree a thing, and I, the mighty I am, will fulfill it for you. And then she said, well, but you command too. You can't command God. And I said, can't I? Well, let me show you where in the scriptures it says, concerning the works of my hands, command ye me. Well, she said, anyhow, that might be all right, but you teach reincarnation, and that isn't in the Bible. I said, isn't it? May I show you where it is, and was taught by Jesus the Christ himself? I should certainly like to see it. Well, she saw it, and she took the Bible out of my hand to read it herself. And then she said, what? Can I buy one of your books? Okay. And so far, we have been so long in a sort of a sluggish atmosphere where we take things more or less for granted, and even if somebody did tell you about the I Am presence, you might say, uh-oh, this bird's a square and he's trying to convince me of something that he located somewhere and he's going off of his trolley. But once you can get one of these beautiful books, and they're not expensive, and read it and find out what you can do and quit being sluggish and quit being backward and talk to your Lord God, for that mighty I Am presence is your Lord God, that in the second chapter of the book of Genesis created you and your body and gave you the breath that you now use and the heartbeat that beats your heart and keeps you alive. This, beloved ones, is my story. I could tell you stories like that on and on, but I want to say that too many would only confuse you. But those few ought to give you the assurance that ye are God. Every man is a God, and every woman is a potential goddess. Believest thou this? If you don't, then you've missed the boat, and you better run and catch it, because the end of the century cometh, and there will be great changes, and then it may be too late. So with all of the love of my heart, I ask you, won't you get on board and start using your divine wisdom that you have gathered for so many thousands of years, for it's all stored there. Every incarnation, only the good is stored there. The other may be called karma,